Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real-life NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right, playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now, but you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Lay. What's up? Yeah. Yeah.
Kayla's in the building, nigga.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when it comes like the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week, we'll preview the Valspar Championship, which actually has quite a loaded field compared to normal, and the return of Adam Hadwin, the guy we were on all of last year, and he finally broke out at the Valspar. But before we get into that, check out the podcast on Twitter at Always Press DFS and my co-host. As always, you can find him on Twitter at BPSnow11. Bucks, how we doing?
Doing great, Bubba. Glad to be back another week. Back home this week, so looking forward to the pod.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And as always, find me on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing, man? It's a big smile on your face.
I'm doing good, man. This is my boy Bucks over there just rocking out now, apparently, on podcasts because he hit Phil Mickelson 50-1 last week. Or not 50-1, 18-1.
Boom.
$50.
I told you. I got my theory. I'm just putting $50 on each of our winners all year. That's it.
I've done it
1 week, 100%. 100% winners.
I like the philosophy and the streak of lefties continue. Oh, 3 out of 4, which I'll take.
3 out of 4.
Considering how many lefties are on tour, it's pretty damn good.
Brian Harman.
Let's do a quick recap of that WGC Mexico, the mayhem that took place on Sunday. JT with his, you know, pulling out eagle on 18 and then playoff and so much more. Jesse, kick us off on Phil winning in the playoffs. What were your thoughts on Phil this week?
Yeah, I was not on Phil. So besides the bet that I placed for Bucks, and then I also placed them for myself, I don't do the whole $50 Bucks level betting, super DGen bet. But so there was a little consolation there. But yeah, he just ran so hot with his putter again. And he's somehow scrambling out of trouble. I mean, I thought for sure when he was crawling in the bushes on 11 or whatever hole he was on when he was crawling in the bushes over there that this was it. Like, this is where he was going to – he somehow made a par, you know. He's just – I don't know. He's got it going at this point. So, but one thing I was thinking about, like, is this maybe potentially the greatest year in golf ever? I mean, it started awesome.
Yeah.
Golf tournaments have been awesome, competitive, you know, minus a couple. There's really been no blowouts. It's just been awesome to watch.
It's been playoff after playoff after playoff, and most leaderboards have a bunch of the young guns, and then the veterans are showing up, so it's been really cool. What are your thoughts on Phil on Sunday, Bucks?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously I had him to win, but I mentioned it before the tournament. Phil, I have mixed emotions. One, I'm a big Phil fan in general. The dude has been playing out of his mind. He finished, I think, 7th last year there. And he hit it everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And so, in my mind, I figured he was hitting his driver better heading into the event. And so, I figured he had a solid chance to at least better his position from the previous year. The only thing that worried me was that he's been playing a ton of golf. And then getting into the altitude, I worried about kind of tiring out, burning out, that kind of thing. But the dude pulled it off, man. I think he played really, really well. But typical Phil, man, he hit the ball mediocre off the tee, hit his irons great, and just got up and down from everywhere.
Yeah.
I would love, and I don't know if he listens to it, but somebody, maybe like Josh ADHD or somebody, if he can tell me what Phil's make percentage in from 20 feet and under when he's putting for birdie versus 20 feet and under from when he's putting for par, I bet you it's astronomically better when he's putting for par, because he didn't seem to miss any of those par putts. It was insane.
Right.
But no, it was a great event. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. And just Sunday Phil was something else. The way he learned his Spanish, not sure where he learned that from, but that was some really, really, really outstanding stuff that he picked. Maybe he learned it from Club Pro Guy. I don't know. But it was outstanding stuff he had going out there.
On the Mexican tour, yeah.
And he also thought Sharma was media.
Media.
The 36-hole leader, and you think he's the media? I mean, he's just unsolved, dude. He's like, Phil's... I could listen to Phil talk all day, every day.
Yeah.
Interviews. I think he'll make a great analyst when he quits playing.
You talk about a degen.
Oh, that big time.
That dude has a future in golf DFS podcasts. That dude degens harder than any of us. He might have had $1,000 on him or $10,000 on him to win that event.
Yeah.
There were points where he was trying to teach people in Spanish how to bet on him. He was trying to teach Sharma how to place his ball before the rules official got there. I use Spanish a lot for work, and he was telling people to get out of the way by saying mucho, mucho, mucho. Trust me, that's not correct. Not at all. that was outstanding, but it was not correct. He was in pure Phil form. The way he was acting, it was weird because we talked about how Tiger is kind of loosened up and is accepting of things. Phil is one of the most cold, like, focused individuals I've watched in a live round of golf. Like, literally, dead focused. But the way he acted Sunday, you would have thought he had a 10-stroke lead going into the round. He was just – it was fun. It was awesome.
For sure.
All right. Let's talk Justin Thomas, though. We can't just look past what amazing run he's been on. Loses in the playoff all. It could have been his third win of the year, all via the playoff, by the way. It's his third playoff of the year. I believe I saw a stat. He's won 7 of his last, like, 32 events he's played in, which is just insanity. That's why he moved up to the world number 2 now. Bucks, what are your thoughts on JT? I know people – the mixed reviews on how who he is one thing, but let's just talk about the play on the course and how impressive it's been.
Yeah, I mean, it's been – incredible, because when you look at him and how he's been playing these courses, I don't like to use this very often, but it's very similar on a different scale, but it's very similar to 97-2000 when Tiger was performing with his B game and C game. Justin Thomas is out there playing mediocre golf and still getting the ball in the hole and in contention. And so it's really, really impressive. And I'm not saying he's at that level, because I don't think anybody will ever be at that level, but he's still competing and in contention with not his best stuff. The only thing that I'll say is that on the flip side, it is, in my mind, similar to DJ last year. Yep, if you remember, DJ played out of his mind the first, I don't know, 8 events of the year last year, and then went on this cold streak right before the Masters. And so I'm interested to see how he's going to play in the next few weeks. and leading up to the Masters, because I don't want it to end, but it's a very similar pattern.
No, that's a great point. It's his DJ-esque, and that's number one and number two in the world golf rankings now are those two young gentlemen. And you look at JT and what he's doing. I believe he would have missed the cut if this was a cut event. He shot a 16 under on the weekend alone. He was even going into the weekend.
Insane.
So
insane.
Absolutely insane what he's doing. Jesse, what was your take on the weekend with JT?
Yeah, I mean, the comparison to DJ is probably good. I mean, DJ did win 2 weeks before the Masters at the match play last year. So, and he did have it going. And he had it, obviously, was very hot going into the Masters and was the overall betting favorite by a long shot. So, I suspect that I think JT will eventually get there. But, yeah, going 62-64 on the weekend with that hole out on the last hole, you know, I was – all over Justin because I thought I could get him at reduced ownership, and
you did
5% on average or whatever he was there. Let's see, he was right around 6% on average. Pretty incredible for a guy who's playing like he was. And I thought that it was a bad call after Friday, but I mean, it's weird because he said that he never felt as uncomfortable as he's ever, you know, it was the most uncomfortable he's ever felt of a golf ball. After Thursday when he shot 72 one over. And then he just somehow just reels off birdie after birdie after birdie on Saturday to get in contention, and then does the same thing on Sunday. Yeah, he's fun to watch. I've become more of a fan. I think it's because I've been playing him on DraftKings, but he just reels off birdies, man. Why people want to fade him is just beyond me, because he just makes I mean, he's a birdie maker. He's the guy you want on DraftKings. So I don't know if that'll be happening moving forward, but it'll be interesting to watch and see if people are still looking to fade him.
Yeah, most definitely. One last thing I just want to mention, and we'll move on. But the leaderboard is really cool because you had a bunch of these names, and you had, like, Mickelson, an old-timer. You know, guys like Alphabet made his return to the leaderboard, and Hadwin finished ninth. Sharma, who obviously in the final group. There was a lot to like on the week. A lot of weird – almost everyone had like a blow-up round and like a crazy good round. And a lot of it people attributed to the altitude or the shits or something. But any final takeaways from the weekend, Bucks?
Not really. I mean, I was disappointed to see not to see like Casey, DJ, Fleetwood, those type of guys kind of in contention. But honestly, I would not change a thing because it was everything you could ever ask for in a golf tournament. And it played almost exactly how we expected it to play.
What about you, Jesse?
Yeah, it was a really good leaderboard. You know, you had Bubba Watson up there, Hadwin, you kind of mentioned earlier a little bit. Dustin Johnson, mediocre, still, you know, finishes tied for seventh, which is a mediocre finish. But still very good on the PGA Tour, obviously. You mentioned Kiradek. Another guy is Tyrell Hatton. You know, he missed the cut the week before, and he bounced back really well at this deal and bogeyed the last hole to miss that playoff. But one thing about that playoff, too, which I think worked out in the favor of Phil, was starting on 17 instead of starting on 18. Because 17, they talked about on the telecast, if you know, it's a lot easier for lefty to – hit a cut shot in there than it was for JT to hit a little bit of a draw. I mean, he nuked a gap wedge apparently, but that played into Phil's hands there, and it was a little bit lucky for him that they went 17-18 instead of just 18.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome weekend and a great finish on Sunday and a great field, and it was fun seeing all the different names up there, not just the typical ones. So I enjoy golf like that. Let's get into the Valspar Championship preview. It's in, I believe, the Jacksonville area. Bucks will get to that shortly. But, Jesse, why don't you kick us off with some past event history of the Snake Pit?
Yeah, it's actually in Tampa Bay.
Oh, I heard Jacksonville all day today for some reason.
Palm Harbor.
It was formerly the Tampa Bay Classic.
That's why I don't do the course preview or anything.
And since then, it's had several name changes. It's been the Valspar for the last 4 years. And I believe it's always been played here. Anyway, I've been playing it for a while. Last year, Adam Hadwin was your champion at 14 under over One shot over Patrick Cantlay. 2016, Charles Schwartzel, 7-under over in a playoff over Bill Haas. 2015, Jordan Spieth, 10-under playoff, Sean O'Hare, Patrick Reed. 2014, John Sinden, 7-under, one shot over Kevin Na. Also, Streelman, Luke Donald, Gary Woodland has won here. So a few more names that are actually that's actually in the field there.
No, I like it. It's one of those courses it seems like it's not the typical names come away at this one. But then again, pretty big field this week of some big names. We'll see how that goes. Bucks, what's a course preview?
Yeah, I think this course, as Jesse mentioned, it's been here a long, long time. This course has been around a long, long time. It got renovated in 2015. They redid all of the fairways, greens, the rough. And so it's full Bermuda. There's TIFF Bermuda on the greens and then a Celebration Bermuda fairways and rough. But this is a really interesting golf course when you consider where it's at. So typically you think Florida, you think a ton of bunkering, you think pretty flat course, you think a lot of homes with those kind of screened in porticos with the pools in it, that kind of thing. But really this golf course is located in an area where there's some rolling hills. There's a lot of undulation, elevation changes. There is some really extreme bunkering, that kind of thing. But the cool thing about this course, and I've played it a couple times, it's really secluded. Like you feel like you don't feel like you're in Florida. You don't feel like you're in the middle of like a community, a development, because it is very tree lined. It's very on its own. But it's just a really good golf course. It's tough, as Jesse mentioned. I mean, you look at the past winning scores, the past winning cuts, the last 3 years, the winning score is something like 10 under, the cuts like plus two. And so it can play difficult, but it rewards those guys that are playing well, that are on their game. And so when you get to the breakdown, there are five par threes, and that's interesting. Typically, par threes are the most difficult holes for a tour player when you talk about under, over par and scoring. The really interesting thing about these par threes is that all five play at 200 yards or over, typically. They're averaging around 212 yards. And so that's like really, really difficult for a par three, especially when you consider you're playing in Florida, you're going to get some winds, you're going to get some weather typically. And so those par threes can be a beast. Then you have nine par fours. You have one that is under 400 yards. You have five that are between 400 and 450 yards. You have one over or three at 450 yards or over. And then you do have four par fives. All of them are over 550 yards, so they're fairly long, but they do yield the majority of scoring. Most weeks they do, but this week it's even more so. So those four holes account for 37% of all DK scoring. If you mix in those mid-range par fours, that's another 25% of all scoring. And so the 400 to 450-yard par fours and then those par fives account for close to 60-some percent of your scoring. And so that should be a core focus. Getting into kind of the course again, you do have six holes that are doglegs. You have over 25 fairway bunkers. And then you have eight holes where water comes into play. And the majority of those holes are on the back nine. And so it can be really difficult in that closing stretch. When you want to talk about averages, trying to figure out what to focus on, the par threes, like I mentioned, you have 212 yards on average. On the par fours, you typically have an average shot in of about 150 yards. And then those par fives, if you're not going for it in two, you have about 90 yards in on average based on the last couple of years of data. But the real story here is much like the Honda, they had the bear trap. We have the snake pit here, and that's the last three holes of the golf course. The crazy thing about that is those three holes, on average, 25% of the scores on those holes are over par. only 10% are under par on average. And so if you have a guy that can get through those holes and survive, he's going to play well. And if you guys remember last year, Hadwin double bogeyed, I believe the 16th, and almost gave it away. If it wasn't for Cantlay bogeying the 18th, he probably would have given it away. But basically, you have 16th, which is a ridiculously hard par 4. Water all up the right side, trees lining the left, dogleg right, just super hard. Then you have 17, 220-yard par 3, really small green. And then 18, you actually have what I consider probably the best hole in the course. It's fairly short par 4. But super narrow sight lines off the tee, tons of bunkering. It rewards the good shots. You hit in the fairway, you have a really good shot at par or birdie. If you don't, you're probably fucked. So overall, awesome course. If you play your game and play well, you're going to be rewarded. If you are not on top of your game, and we mentioned this, and I know he's not playing, but Justin Thomas – has had a couple rounds here where he's been off his game. If you're not on your game here, it can really, really get you. So, yeah.
I like it. That was a really, really good in-depth preview. Covered it all. Because, yeah, this can be a tricky course if you mess around, it sounds like. And scoring comes at a premium, like you stated. So, sure. It's going to be really interesting as we approach this weekend. Speaking of approaching this weekend, Jesse, what are the key stats you're looking at as you build your DraftKings lineups?
Yeah, it's more accuracy. I mean, I think there's still a little bit of merit to driving distance just because some guys will be hitting driver off the tee, and then the longer hitters will obviously be hitting 3-wood or left off the tee. So that could play a little bit. Greens and regulation as usual, scrambling, bogey avoidance, birdie or better. A lot of the same stuff, just kind of weighted differently for me. And then there's also some pretty good course history this week too, so I'll include that as I go as well.
What about you, Bucks? What are you looking at?
Yeah, so, I mean, I like what Jesse mentioned there. I mean, it is a par 71 to 7,300 yards, so it's pretty long for a par 71, and that's pretty indicative of those par 3s. But as I mentioned in that course preview, I mean, 37% of your scoring comes from those par 5s, and then another close to 30% comes from par 4s that are between 400 and 450 yards. So kind of the stats that I always play every week are DK points, birdies, birdie or better, bogey avoidance, and then recent form. But for this week, the big ones that I'm going to be focused on are bogey avoidance. That's going to be huge because this isn't a deep scoring event typically. So bogey avoidance, greens and regulation, fairways gained. And then I focus on a couple of those yardages that are specific. So I focus on the par 5 scoring, and then I focus on par 4s, 400 to 450 yards. But what I am going to focus the majority of my percentage on is bogey avoidance, strokes gain approach, and then greens and regulation. Because if you look at the last couple winners here, including Hadwin last year, he was top 4 in both strokes gain approach and greens and regulation gain. And that goes for most of the guys that play well here.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you guys are saying there. The strokes gain approach, greens and reg, I think are very important. Par 5 scoring, something to definitely keep an eye on. I'm always a current form event history guy, and as Jesse mentioned, there's a lot of interesting event history on this one, and I think I'm going to use that as definite tiebreaker material for me this week, if not some main focusing material for me. So with that being said, let's get into the DraftKings picks. 10K and above range, we have 5 golfers who have all played well here, except Rory McIlroy, because he never has played here. But we got Jordan Spieth at 11-8, McIlroy at 11-3, Sergio Garcia at 10-9, Stenson at 10-2, Justin Rose at 10,000. Jesse, who do you like?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this will come down for me to, like, ownership, as it usually does. I think there's some merit to playing Jordan Spieth. If you watched last week, his putter was awful inside of, like, 10 feet. And so new green type here, you know, going off the Poana to – whatever these greens are. These greens, did you say Bucks? Did you say these greens are
Bermuda?
Bermuda. Yeah. Tip Bermuda.
Yeah. So going back to Bermuda greens for him, I don't know if that's good or bad, but either way, I think there's potential that he could be low owned, just especially too, because this pricing kind of sets up like last week's pricing does, where there's not a whole lot of comfort level in the low sevens and in the sixes. And so in order to fit Jordan in, you have to kind of take a leap of faith with some guys. So I don't like Rory at all. I do think Sergio will be popular. Henrik, I'm not sure about, but I do like Henrik quite a bit. And then Justin Rose kind of surprised me last week. I expected him to be a lot more chalky than he was. He had kind of a blah week. He did kind of turn it on a little bit on Sunday and bounced back. I think he shot 66 on Sunday or 60-something, 67, 66, something like that. So I think there's some merit in him. I mean, again, there's merit in all these guys, and it'll come down to, like, projected ownership through fan share and that kind of thing. But right now my top two would be Garcia and Stinson.
Nice. What are you looking at your Bucks?
Yeah, so this week is interesting for me. So I'm playing a single bullet this week. But there are a few guys here. My number one pick in this range is going to be Stinson. One, because he pops on the model, which is great. He has good course history here. But two or three, whatever it is, I think that he's going to be fairly low owned in between Sergio and Rose. And so I think that's going to happen. Plus, like Jesse mentioned, he is a big question mark. It's not like he's been out here playing every week like some of these guys. This is his first real event back, getting ready for the Masters. And so I do like his game, and I like his game for this course and the way it sets up for him. But he is a big question mark, and it kind of concerns me. The other guy that I would play in this range is Spieth. And to Jesse's point, he sits fairly well with my model. He started playing a little bit better last week, but Jesse mentioned it earlier in the podcast. This is, or no, you did, Bubba. This is like one of the best starts of a golf season that I can remember. Like, everybody seems to be rounding into form, getting prepped for the Masters. Like, we're set for like this just awesome, awesome event. The one guy that hasn't really been just like on fire is Spieth. And I think he's going to round into form at like the exact right time. And it's just a matter of one of these weeks where he finds it. And in an event like this, where you do have a lot of good players, but it's not like your WGC, I think that it could be a week like this. And at 11-8, with the way he's been playing, I think that he's going to be sub-20, maybe sub-15. There's only one guy in here that I really can't get behind, and that's Rory. That's, again, a superstar, can find it any week. But there's no way that anybody on this planet can convince me that Rory's game is at the right place for this week at a course that demands some precision. So he's really the only guy in this range that I would fade. But Stenson's my number one here.
Yeah, I agree on the Rory take. I want nothing to do with him this week. If he wins, wouldn't be shocked, but I kind of would be at the same time, just because he's talented enough to win any time. But I agree, his form just isn't there right now, which actually terrifies me. But when we get into you mentioned Spieth as a big choice. If you want to spend up, I can get it. You'd have to take some chances down below. But Stinson's my guy. 10-2. I like him a lot. Playing three wood there will allow him to play within the trees a lot better than guys, you know, trying to bomb drivers around the course. So I like Stinson a lot at 10-2. I think Garcia will be the chalk of the chalk. Rose, I think, will be super low owned again because people will see how he played last week and they'll be off of him. So I have no problem if you want to go that way. But Stinson's my guy at 10-2. Going into the 9K range, we have five golfers: Casey, Tiger Woods, Tony Finau, Moore, and Gary Woodland. Bucks kicks off in the 9Ks.
Yeah, this is kudos to DraftKings this week. I really do think that the price in this week was on point, because it has made me think. Last week was another good one, but it's made me think way more than most weeks where you kind of like are forced into one or two golfers.
Yeah.
So in this range, I mean, again, there's only one guy in this range that I can't get behind, and that's unfortunately Tiger Woods. He played really well at the Honda. He actually drove the ball better, but he hit a lot of one iron or two irons, a lot of fairway woods off the tee. And so he kept it in play. And I'm not entirely sure what he's going to do here. I don't think he has to hit driver everywhere here. I think there's a premium on that accuracy. But again, this is more of an event where maybe if you're in a GPP, hammer him, whatever. But he's just not a safe play. I want him to win, and I hope he does, but I can't possibly play him, especially when he's right in between Paul Casey and Tony Finau, which are my top two guys in this range. So Paul Casey is Paul Casey. I mean, there's not a week where anybody can argue against him. There's just not. Like, the guy is a perennial top 10 player. Like, the dude's on fire every week. And it's just a matter of time before he breaks through like Phil. We talked about it last week. Casey, I thought, was going to break through, or Phil was going to break through, one of those. And so same thing this week. I could definitely see Casey rounding in the form at the right time and winning one of these weeks, finally. And then you have Finau, who is awesome, like has been legit. And the reason why I like him so much is because he's top 10 in not only bogey avoidance, but he's top 10 in strokes gained approach. And he's first in par 5 scoring. And so Finau, he'll definitely be on my roster. But I love him this week. Then you got the two guys, Ryan Moore, Gary Woodland. Woodland burned me so bad this last week that I can't touch him this week. But it would not surprise me if he came out here and balled out. He just didn't have his driver last week. And if that continues this week, he's going to be screwed.
Yeah, what do you got in the 9Ks, Jesse?
Yeah, Woodland's, you know, course history since he won is very, very sketchy. Starting with last year, 58th, 42nd, miscut, 8th, miscut, 29th. I mean, I would rather pay up a little bit or go down lower. We'll talk about some of those guys here in a minute. So not super big on Woodland. I think there's some merit in Ryan Moore. Now, with Ryan Moore, it's really weird because, so he was 7,400 2 weeks ago at the Honda, and now he's 94 or 91. I mean, that's really, really strange, that big of a price increase. But course history, 18th, 3rd, 5th, after two missed cuts the last 5 years. So it's there. Now, will he pay that off? I don't know. I think that's a good potential GPP starting place there. Paul Casey, obviously, you know, what do I have to say about Paul Casey besides he was super talky last week? He was 44% owned in the $400.
Insane.
Uber chalk, but his price was 8,400. This week, it's not, you can't do one of the two top guys in Paul Casey, so I don't expect him to be that much. Love Tony Finau. He scores, you know, a lot of DraftKings points. That's what you want. And if you can take the tilt, miss 5 footers, you know, you can be okay there.
Exactly.
I want nothing to do with Tiger. I think he will be much higher on this week than what he was at the Honda.
Yeah, I agree. We're all going to be rooting for Tiger, but I doubt any of us have Tiger in our lineups. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, I will. If he wins, I'll be the first one clapping for this guy, but I want nothing to do with him. Maybe next week, a little course he's more familiar with, but not here. But yeah, Casey at 98, absolutely love. If you don't want to go up top, you can start with Casey all day long. Because one reason why I don't mind it, if he goes for his T15s or T10s at 98, you can accept that more than paying for Spieth or something at 11-8. You need them to win. So you could definitely build there, and there's a lot you can build with as we go down the list. Finau, don't mind, like you mentioned, Bucks. Woodland, yeah, I'm with you guys there, but if you're not playing Casey in this range, I really like Ryan Moore. He's $9,100. I think that price increase is going to keep him super low on. He's a good pivot in this range. He has 5 top 20s and 11 appearances at this course, and his last 3 times he's played here, a 5th, a 3rd, and a T18. Did scuffle a bit his last time out with a T49, but prior to that, a T9, a miscut, a T6. So his form's a lot better than it once was. Still sketchy, still shaky, but a lot better than it was. He does like this course a ton. He's one of those course history guys that really has my attention here. So I do like Ryan Moore at 9,100.
We take this brief break in the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast to talk to you about RotoWear, one of the greatest shirts in fantasy sports. They have DFS shirts, fantasy season long, all kinds of great shirts. They're the best quality shirts in the industry. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality, premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts, specialized printing process, design is part of the shirt, literally dyed, bleached into the fabric, no thick ink. It's ridiculous the amount of options you can find, over 30 different designs. Fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, DFS, they keep coming out with more and more and more stuff. Men's, women's, kids, you name it, they've got it. There's lots of buzz kicking up in the fantasy industry about it. People are wearing these shirts. They're representing the shirts. They are great quality shirts. And you can have one too. You can have more than one, as many as you want. Just use the promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, DEGENS, for 20% off your order. Go to rotowear.com. Or go to at RotoWear on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check out what they have. They're giving away free shirts all the time on Twitter. But when you go to purchase, use the code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, for 20% off your order. Now back to the Always Pressing PGA TFS podcast.
Let's dip into the 8Ks. We got 10 guys. The defending champion Hadwin. You got Adam Scott, Brendan Grace, Webb Simpson, Bucks Boy, Benny On, who's been playing really good golf, Fitzpatrick, Kuchar, Usti, Knott, Smith. Another one of Buck's boys. He's going to have some tough decisions here. I'll break down the 8Ks real quick, and I'll pass it on. Hadron, I don't mind 88. I think he's going to be chalk because that name has gone everywhere right now, but he's playing great golf. T9 or better in three of his last five tournaments. We know he's the defending champion here. But outside of his win here, he miscut and 71st his last three times here. So play with a grain of salt, but he's playing really, really well. So I can't hate it. I don't mind Webb at 8,500. Bucks has got me focused on Webb. If he continues to putt okay, he's playing really good golf. And this course, you know, prodding around there isn't the worst place for him. But I'm going to probably avoid those two and look towards Benny On as an interesting play. I'd never play him, but I really like the way he's playing of late at T5 his last time out. And at his price tag, you can do a lot when you're building your lineups there. If not him, Ryan Fitzpatrick's a guy I look to a lot. He's a guy on the Euro Tour I'm a big fan of. People are going to get to know his name by the end of this year, the more he plays on the PGA. Very, very good ball striker, consistent player. T30 last time out, I believe it was last weekend, missed cut. But then prior to that, T3, T19, and a 12th, really good at $8,300. And then I am on the Golden Cherub this week at 8K. I'll let Bucks drool over him and explain why. But I really like the way he's playing right now. And I think he could have be in store for a big week this week. So – with that being said, Bucks, what do you have in the 8Ks?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good range with a lot of my favorite plays, and so it is tough. I mean, you start out the 8K range here with Adam Hadwin, who is just on fire right now, and I love the way he's playing. He is really, really solid when it comes to hitting fairways, his strokes gain approach. And the way he attacks par threes is really, really impressive. And here, when you have five par threes all over 200 yards, that's really important. While the par threes don't garner a ton of DK points, you can certainly lose a lot of points on these par threes. And so that bogey avoidance on the par threes is really important. So I do like Hadwin. I do like Webb Simpson. He is kind of, I'll say he's this, it's the same reason I liked him for the Honda. He avoids bogeys. He's been putting better. And he is just a consistent player. Like when you look at his stats even, there's not too many like glaring holes where he is outside the top 50 in one single category. So he's just a consistent player. Then you get down to Han. He's the same boat. Like, he makes a ton of birdies. He has a ton of DK points, but he also avoids bogeys pretty well. And he is in the top 20 when you talk about strokes gained approach. The only thing that concerns me about Benny On is kind of the way that he plays those core par fours, the 400 to 450 yard par fours. Like I said earlier, close to 30% of your scoring comes on those holes. and he's 125th in this field in par four scoring in that range. And so that worries me. Outside of that, Louis Oosthuizen is a really, really interesting one for me. He's been playing better, and I think he goes overlooked in this range. And at 8,100 yards, you have a really strong talent. And it's here that I'll mention, and we talk about it almost every week, but especially here, we talked about the Honda 2. Your number one goal here is to find six cut makers.
Yep.
If you can have six cut makers, you're going to cash in an event like this. And so you want to find guys that you're confident that's going to make the cut. Louis is one of those guys this week for me. So I do like him. One guy that I'm not on, and it kind of bothers me because I play him every week, is the Golden Cherub.
What?
I will say the only reason I'm not on him is because I do have a single bullet this week. If I had five or six lineups, I would probably be playing him 30% or something like that. But here's the reasons why. He does avoid bogeys kind of the way that I would want, but he is not scoring the points that I expect either. And so he has been on fire. Like, he's been playing really well, and I expect that to continue. Just for some reason, he's not coming up on my model. And with so many guys around him that I like this week, it's going to be tough for me to move that direction. So I hope he wins, though. I really do. I hope he wins.
All right, Jesse, what do you like in the 8K range?
I can't believe you're not respecting the feed with Cam Smith there, you know?
That's crazy. It's not good for my brand.
It's not good for the brand. It's not good for the brand. There's a lot of guff on the feed there. It's funny because, like, so Ben On is number one on my model. He's number one on my model, and I'm like, I don't know how this is happening. And so I'm kind of freaked out by that, but it's hard not to play him. He's been playing very well. His course history is kind of sketchier, though. It's just, he did make the cut last year, 49th, so nothing outstanding. But he's coming off a fifth-place finish at the Honda, 23rd before that, and sixth over in Dubai. So I do like Ben Hahn quite a bit. I like Hadwin. You know, he was $6,800 here last year, obviously won. At 8,800, he doesn't have to win, but we do need a top 20 for sure out of him. I think he's more than capable of that. His form recently, I've been playing him the last couple of weeks, and he's definitely turned on. I think that the golf world will notice that, and he will be probably in the 20-ish percent range given this pricing. Louis Oosthuizen, another guy, was super tilted when he was leading last week. He did finish seventh here last year. He kind of fell off on the weekend with a 76th in the third round. But he's kind of rounding in form. He's not played a whole heck of a lot of golf competitively recently. So Adam Scott's another guy to give a look at. He just tilts me all the way to death. I tweeted out something earlier about not playing Kuchar at 8,200, and somebody, you know, tweeted me back saying he tends to bounce back after bad performances. But I don't know what is going on with him.
He's in a funk.
He is, man. I mean, I watched him all last week. I followed him on Shot Tracker because I played him quite a bit. I played him too much. And he just wasn't – his approaches were off. I mean, maybe it was the altitude. But he couldn't make putts either. He was missing putts inside 10 feet. And that really, really bugs me. Maybe it was the greens. I don't know. I mean, he's worth a look at 8,200. He should be probably low-owned. So I'm going to – I mean, his course history is phenomenal.
Yep. He's 7-for-7 with four top 15 since 2009.
Yeah, so, I mean, pretty good for $8,200.
Yeah, it's tough to ignore. And you know, even as bad as he's playing, the thing Buck said, he's making cuts. He's not missing cuts.
Right.
So he's not helping you, like, go big, but he's making cuts. So
he's tilting, though.
Oh, tilting as hell, because, you know, we're all pretty big cooch guys on this show. Yeah. So that's a tough one there. All right, let's go to the land of every other golfer, the 7K range. And there's, like, you mentioned Hadwin at 68 last year, and he won this thing. there are some guys in the 7K range that I would not be shocked if they contend, and I see some serious top 15, top 10 guys in this range. That's why I could see some heavy lineups up top with some guys down here. Jesse, kick us off with some guys you like in the 7K range.
Yeah. Especially up top here, there's quite a few guys. I'll just run over a few, though. Tez Reavy, I think he's got a lot of merit this week. I mean, this is a shorter – well, you don't have to be extra long on this golf course. Recently, he's not played as well as he did in those two tournaments when he finished back-to-back seconds. So I can see people being off of him, but I do like him at 7,900. Another guy's Luke List at 7,800. Now, traditionally, I wouldn't think of him as somebody who would maybe do as well, but obviously coming off a second at the Honda, a similar type of golf course. So I think he's got some merit there. Excuse me. Jason Kokrak. Ross Fisher is another guy. Kevin Streelman, I'll have a lot of really good course history here, and I've been playing pretty decent golf recently. Steve Stricker last year was super chalky because he had finished in the top 10 three straight appearances here, and he missed the cut. So there's maybe some merit there.
Didn't Stricker win on the Champions Tour last week?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Did he?
Yeah, he came. Yeah. He's coming first and second last two events.
Yeah.
Well,
he's balling.
Good for him, man. Rock it out, Stevie. I mean, well, he can obviously win at the Champions Tour level, so there's that. Glover. Yeah. I think that's a really weird price on Charlie Hoffman, 7,300, and it's kind of because he's got a couple of missed cuts with a sandwich between an 11th, but dude was making a lot of birdies last week. He just had a lot of F-up holes, I guess. And going on down toward the bottom, Bo Hostler at 7,100. Missed the cut here last year, but he has played some decent golf. GPP only for me. I don't know how much I'll have of him, but he's interesting because of that price. And then Keegan Bradley at 7,000. You know, it's pretty low.
Too cheap. Too cheap. Bucks, what do you like in the 7K range?
Dude, there's like a million golfers here.
Thousand.
Yeah. I mean, Chez Reavy is second on my model. It's hard to ignore the way he's been playing. The only issue for me, and it's a non-issue right now until it's an issue, is just getting burnt out. The dude plays every week. And so he – I don't know. I like the way he's been playing, but $7,900. There's a lot of players down here that I like as well. One guy that I don't like, but he's popping on the model, is Zach Johnson. I'm likely going to avoid him, which scares me, because he has been scoring a ton of DK points and he avoids bogeys, really, really well. So that's the perfect setup for this golf course. Bob, I'm glad you mentioned Steve Stricker. Dude came top 25 in his only tour event of the year. Two top two finishes on the Champions Tour last 2 weeks. So the dude is in form. And you talk about a guy that has a game to keep it in play, avoid bogeys, take his chances. This is a course for him, man. I really, really like Steve Stricker this week. If he can muscle up his hybrid to hit it into those par threes, he's got a really solid chance this week. I do like him. Then you got Russell Knox right below him. Wasn't Russell Knox like 90-some-hundred bucks?
Yep.
Last week or a couple weeks ago? Like, insane. So he's been playing well. Kevin Streelman, Jesse already mentioned him, but he's top five model. And then I sent you guys a message earlier. Dude was 9,000 plus, but Chesson Hadley is 7,400 bucks, and I rode him hard earlier this year. I might have to hop back on that train. He is 13th on my model, but he is top 20 in DK points and birdies, top 25 in bogey avoidance, first in strokes gained approach, and then top 25 in par 3, par 5 scoring. So I really like Hadley again this week, 7,400 bucks. With so many options down here, I'm hoping he's not real chalky, especially with his last performance not being great, but we'll just have to see. And then I'll give a couple more down here. Won't explain too much, but I really like the way Chris Kirk is playing. Keegan Bradley's interesting. CT Pan's interesting. And then one guy to keep an eye on that I think is going to be severely overlooked, but he's been playing really, really well, and his game suits this course really well, is Brian Gay. So keep an eye on him, because I love him this week.
Yeah, a lot of good guys as expected. I'm going I like Duff Daddy at $7,800, 9 for 9 on cuts here, including 7 top 25s, 6 straight years of a top 25 finish. At $7,800, give me a top 25. We can move on. I do like Zach Johnson quite a bit at $7,700. I think he'll be chalky, though, so I'm going to probably go elsewhere, because even if he doesn't finish well, he has been playing really well. That's just too cheap for ZJ, in my opinion. Like you said, a very good bogey avoider, which you're looking for at this tournament. A guy I do like is Ross Fisher at $7,600. Another good Euro Tour player. Bill Haas, defending champion. Probably stay away there, but he had to finish second last year. Schwartzel, we've talked about him the last few weeks, at $7,500. Don't mind him at all. A 6 and a 1st his last 2 years here. One of my favorite players of the week is Kevin Streelman at $7,500. Absolutely love the way he's playing. He's a cup machine with a chance to contend, and that's what I'm looking for. I love Streelman. If he misses the cut, so be it. $7,500. I'm a big Streelman fan this week. A guy I like to play in GPPs this week until I heard he was undercursed is Bryson DeChambeau at 74. He's actually been playing decent golf of late and played well in his one time here. You know, you mentioned Hadley, CH3, plays decent at this course, 11 of 14 cuts made, 7 top 25s, 4 top 15s. Something to think about there. But as you go down, you mentioned Charlie Hoffman's mispriced. One of my other favorite plays in this range, my boy at $7,300, is John Huh. Absolutely love T9 last year. He's gone T9, T22, T33 his last 3 trips here, and he's been playing really, really good golf. At $7,300, this is a great kind of punt play. If you want to consider $7,300 a punt, this is a good one in my opinion. I really like the form he's in and his course history here. Yeah, you go down the list and you look at the likes. Stanley already pulled out. For those that might not know, Kyle Stanley pulled out already. We didn't mention Sink, I don't think, unless I missed it. Jesse at 7K. He's interesting. He's been tilting of late, but he's an interesting play at that price. The other guys I like is, you mentioned Keegan Bradley at 7K. He's just too cheap for what you get from him. But my favorite guy down here at 7K, 10 for 10 on cuts here, 5 top 25s, including a top 14. Tied for 14th last year, and he's been a cut machine of late. Nick Watney is at $7,000, playing really, really good golf at a 7K price range. So I will definitely have him at some of my punts. Like Watney and Huh at the bottom for me open up some stuff up top, which I like quite a bit. Let's get to the 6K range where it's not pretty as always. Bucks kicks off in the 6K range.
Yeah, there's a couple guys here that I actually like. I got to shout out my boy Ben Martin. Killed it at the Honda. Well, I wouldn't say killed it, but played well for, played well for his price there. Made the cut. Exactly. So I do like him again this week. He is top 5 in the par 3 scoring, and then top 20 in both DK points, birdies, and par 4 scoring. And he plays well on difficult tracks. So I like him. Aaron Wise is another guy to look at. Ryan Armour, another guy that seems to be playing decent down here. And then the last guy I'll mention, just because he comes in top 10 in a few of my categories, is Vaughn Taylor. He typically keeps it in play. He avoids bogeys. He can score on the par fives pretty well. So with all that being said, if he can avoid bogeys and score on the par fives, and he's going to be in contention. So I do like Vaughn Taylor, $6,700 or bucks.
Not bad at all. Jesse, what do you like down the 6K range?
Yeah, I was looking at Vaughn Taylor, but he's miscut.
$6,700.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just going to try my best to just stay away from this range.
Sure, yeah.
100%, to be honest. I mean, like, not even get close to it at all, because this is sketch. McSkesterton's. The only guy that I really would consider is Hudson Swafford. And I don't even know how much I really like that because he made the cut to Honda Classic, but he shot 81 on Sunday, so it's kind of scary. One guy I didn't mention at 7,000, and I meant to mention Sam Saunders. He's been trending really well before that miscut the Honda Classic, playing really good golf in his previous five tournaments. So there's a chance there that Sam gets a roster spot or two. So other than that, man, I mean, I just – this range this week is gross.
It's brutal. 6K range, I agree. I like Ben Martin if I'm going down here. Five straight made cuts overall, T52 here last year. I don't mind that. That dart at 6,900. Another guy that I always like of GPPs down in this range just because the upside could be tremendous with him, but the tilt could be extraordinary as well, is Nick Taylor at $6,800. He can go low, and it's the kind of thing you're looking for to win a GPP down here. I do like Swafford at 68, like you mentioned, Jesse. The only other guy I'd kind of look at if I wanted to come down here would be Blaine Barber. He's made two straight cuts here at 6,800, but still pretty sketchy overall. So good luck if you try to these large. That's why I said like Watney and Bradley and Sink at 7K. I'd rather try to get up there if we could.
I agree with you on that. If you can take a couple guys that's in the low sevens there, they'll open up quite a bit up top. So I would rather.
I wouldn't be shocked if those guys T25. The guys in the sixes, I'm just shooting for a cut.
Right.
Let's talk about those punts. What are your top punts this week, Bucks?
Top punts would probably be Ben Martin again, and Aaron Wise.
What about you, Jesse?
I would say Sam Saunders would be one. Another guy I didn't mention, but finished third here last year. Dominic Boselli. I mean, he is super sketchy, but if he makes the cut, like generally speaking, he's making a decent run on the weekend. So he might be worth a lineup or two, but he probably will be, you know, 5 to 7, 8% in GPP. So I don't know if I really want to touch that, but that's a chance there. How about it?
Yeah, Watney's my favorite punt. I mentioned Bradley and Sink. If I have to go below 7, it'd be Ben Martin. That would be where I'd be going. Bucks, who is your bust of the week?
Bust of the week. That's tough, man. Bust of the week, I will go with Sergio Garcia.
Ooh,
I like it because it'll be chalky.
That's tough for me.
Yeah. Jesse, who are you picking as your bust of the week?
I mean, this is pretty easy. Rory, I mean, at 11-3, you know, he's basically got to win. I mean, it's the easy route. The only reason I don't say Sergio is because I might play him, and I don't want to say that and then play him. So, other than that, you know, Tiger maybe?
Yeah. I'd say Rory if I don't want to go up top. Woods is the obvious, but if I want to be off the board a little bit, I'll go Gary Woodland as a bust. Yeah. I don't think he gets it done. Who's your core this week, Bucks?
Core this week likely going to be Stenson, Bennion, Hadley.
I like it. What about you, Jesse?
I mean, I'm on the Bennion train. Streelman and probably Stenson as well. Yeah,
I think it's gonna be unanimous. I'm all over Stenson. I like him a lot. And then Duffner and Streelman, that'll be my three-man core and build around there. But it's gonna be an interesting week. I think the leaderboard comes Sunday could be very interesting.
Yeah.
Bucks, what do you got for the winner's circle?
Yeah, I mean, outside of Stenson, I'll give you two. One, I think Tony Finau wins soon. So Tony Finau,
28
and then what?
28-1.
Yep, 50 on that. Okay.
What's Stenson at, by the way? Since we all like him,
20.
Not bad.
Love that too. And then history being made. Steve Stricker, back-to-back wins, different tours.
God.
Oh, wow.
What the hell is his prize?
That's got to pay big money. I like the balls. I'll say that much. He was 55 earlier. That's not as much. I thought he'd be higher than that.
I got 66.
That's what he's gone up.
$50 on that one.
There you go. Jesse, what do you have for a winner?
Man, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to go and say that fuck. I want to say Ben. I'm just going to say Ben Ahn. I think Ben Ahn gets it done this week.
Nice. What do you got him at?
40.
40. I like it. I do like Stenson at 20-1. I agree with that one. If I have to give two out, one of these days it's going to happen on U.S. soil. Paul Casey is very locked in right now.
25.
But the if you want more of a long shot, kind of a Stricker play here, the one I really, really like, and I might just be stupid for this, is Kevin Streelman.
Streel.
I like him a lot this week.
He won here once.
Yes, he has, and he's been playing some great freaking golf.
We'll see. Where's he at? He is 60.
60-1. I love it. Right. Want it.
We're locking in Finau, Stricker, Streelman, and Ben Ahn.
Get it in.
$50 a piece, right?
Yep.
All right. Love it. All right. That wraps up the DraftKings preview of the Valspar Championship. Any final words, Bucks?
No. Other than remember cup makers here.
Yep. Jesse, what are your final thoughts on the week?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that a lot of people will think like that, and so your more balanced lineups will be popular. But that mid 8 to mid 7 range has been very popular. So be on the lookout for those guys, and if you get some pivots there, you know, it's not necessarily a bad idea.
Yeah, look for the guys in the same price range that you can pivot off of and make a cut. So not a bad call there. I think it's going to be a fun week of golf. Good challenging course is always interesting to watch. So as always, thanks for joining us on the Always Press Team PGA DFS podcast. Check us out on Twitter at Always Press DFS. Bucks is at BP Snow 11. Jesse at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BD Entrick. You can get the pod on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spreaker. Until next week, everybody, this is your Valspar Championship preview. Catch you guys later. Show goes on.